behavior when they think that they know where gang members may be. And so if you've been under a rock, you may not know that at Blue Monk on Saturday, three rap artists were scheduled to perform, three African-American rap artists. And as has been the practice of Portland police downtown, if a black group is performing rap, there seems to be enhanced police presence, because I think Portland police equates rap with gangs, with black. And so if you add one and one with Portland police, you get three. So that's a problem. And the question is, what is the solution? And so please, if you'd like to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. Were you at Blue Monk over the weekend? Were you one of the people that left when the police showed up? What was the vibe in that situation? I understand the whole street was shut down because of the potential for gang members. I also understand that the gang enforcement team was out in full force. And for people who don't know how Portland's gang enforcement team operates, when they show up with at least 10 officers and riot gear, pretty much, because they're covered with weapons from head to toe. And they are a pretty intimidating force in their own right when they show up at locations. And whether they're showing up to search one individual or they're showing up at a nightclub, they show up as a gang of at least 10. I've seen them have as much as 12 people because other people are coming to other police forces are working with them to observe how Portland does gang enforcement. And so from everything that I've read, it appears that Portland police, not the fire marshal, not patrons, not the club owner, but Portland police decided that since there were three African-American hip-hop artists, and one of the hip-hop artists allegedly has a gang background, the assumption by Portland police was this was going to be a gang show. So therefore, they needed to find any reason they could to try to shut it down. Now, was the club over capacity? Maybe, maybe not. I've certainly been there when there's been more than 85 people in the basement, and the fire marshal has never shown up. Portland police have never shown up. There's never been any complaint that was registered about it being over capacity. So again, I'm asking you to use your own common sense lens and decide whether or not the fire marshal was called by Portland police. The fire marshal showed up. The fire marshal didn't appear to be able to count. Didn't appear to have the capability of being able to count how many people were actually in the basement, because one time he said 170, which would have been absolutely impossible if you've ever been inside the Blue Monk's basement. And then at another point, he said it was 135. So we have incompetent police who create a situation where there wasn't one. We have a fire marshal that comes out and does the bidding of Portland police. And then we have the Portland police hanging out to intimidate people into leaving a legal venue that they've paid their hard-earned money to go and listen to rap music. Now, I think this is pretty appalling. I think that we have a police department that is totally out of control. If you watched the news last week, Portland police released new traffic and pedestrian stop data. That data, when it was released, it was from 2011, so it's not recent data. It's not data we haven't seen before. The difference in this particular traffic stop data, however, is that Portland police have now broken down their data into like traffic offenses. So those are recorded separately. Pedestrian and why the pedestrian was stopped, right? Was it a a discretionary stop by the officer, or was there a probable cause? And as you look at all the data that's collected in this new report, one thing becomes very, very clear. When police officers are stopping anybody in the community because of criminal behavior, these stops are consistent with people's numbers in the general population. I will say that again. When police stop people based on criminal activity, observing criminal behavior or traffic infractions, for the African American population, those stops equal 6%. That's how many African Americans are stopped. Well, guess what? In the city of Portland, there are 6% African American population. So if you look at traffic offenses, African Americans are stopped at their rate in the population. And it's also consistent with traffic accidents. African Americans are involved in 6% of traffic accidents. African Americans are stopped at a rate of 6%. But then when you move on to Portland Police discretionary stops, like when they do what they call mere conversation, which is a mere conversation if you're African American or Latino, that's when Portland police officers walk up, hey, how you doing? Can I search your pockets? Do you have ID? What are you doing in the neighborhood? Where have you been, et cetera, et cetera. Portland police call that call that mere conversation. It's not mere conversation if you cannot leave, if the police have your ID, if the police have already searched you. But Portland police have been creative and not adding that into the numbers for their actual stops, because they don't consider that a stop, even though people don't think they can leave. So in that particular case, they say in the 6 months in 2011 that they studied, that Portland police stopped 2,800 people for mere conversations. But again, none of those were searches. In that case, African Americans were stopped at a rate that's well over 2 times their numbers in the population. If you go over to the gang enforcement numbers, the disparity is even more egregious, because what you find is that African Americans are stopped at rates of up to 5 times their numbers in the population. And so the more you look at the report, the more I realize with my analysis is that when Portland police officers have discretion, they racially profile people in significantly high numbers. And so we're going to talk later in the program about the profiling down of houseless individuals downtown, and how Portland police are colluding with private security guards to remove houseless peoples from places where they're trying to get rest and just trying to get out of the elements. And so if you want to join the conversation, give me a call at 503-231-8187. When the owner of the Blue Monk was interviewed, she seemed really perplexed why Portland police were in her establishment. And she seemed pretty perplexed why the fire marshal would lie to her about him just happening to be in the neighborhood. So Saturday night, he just thought it'd be really cool to go to a rap show and just check on the capacity why he was there. That doesn't pass the sniff test by any measure. And in fact, Portland Police Public Information Office, the office that does press releases all day long to tell us how fearful we should be of community members, that particular office, Peter Simpson, I believe is the name of the public information officer, who has given 4 inconsistent statements since Saturday night about who showed up first, who called who, and why they were at the Blue Monk in the first place. Now, I find it very ironic that we close off streets downtown Portland to allow white kids to party in the clubs and remove the vehicles so that they can party in an atmosphere that's festival. I find it ironic that on Alberta, we can have the Alberta Street Fair, but as long as white kids started it and created this festival and all the drinking that takes place on the street and all the activity and all the frustration with the neighbors. In both of those cases, downtown nightclubs and on Alberta Street, had that been African-American kids who had started that, neither of those activities would be taking place today. And so I have real concerns that we are creating a community where the police get to decide that black people are criminals until they prove otherwise. And then so we develop policing policies based on that mindset. To me, that's a huge problem. And we've been too silent too long in allowing the police to target kids because of the color of their skin, because of how they dress, and because of the kind of music they listen to. I think I found some rap music I like, but that's not my venue. But I think anybody who wants to go and listen to rap should not have to worry about aggressive police presence when they're out to have a good time. So we're going to go to the phone line. Hello, Kenny. Welcome to KBOO.
Hey.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Pretty good. Well, I was just driving through town and switching through the radio stations and ran across you, but I'm white and don't listen to really too much rap, but I mean, it seems like the police harass me quite a bit too. And
in what way are you harassed? What do you mean?
Well, they'll stop me and ask me if they could search me all the time. I mean, I am a felon, and that's been about 10-11 years ago. I've got a felony,
right?
But they see some tattoos that I have, and they'll stop me, and they always stop me, harass me if they see tattoos or anything, especially the summertime when I'm wearing T-shirts or something.
Right.
But they always ask if they could search me, and are you a felon just because of my tattoos and stuff like that.
Right. And that was like 10 and 11 years ago, and you're still having that experience today?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
And so when tell me, so if the police come up, I mean, as you know, you have the right to say no, they can't search you.
Yeah, I have told them that before too, because I'm trying to study the law,
right?
And everything, and you do have the right to tell them no, and you don't have to show them ID or nothing as long as you haven't committed a crime.
Right, especially if you're walking, right? If you're walking, there's really no need to have ID on your body when you're walking.
Yeah. Yeah, and you absolutely don't have to give it to them whatsoever, and they can't do nothing about it.
And so have you tried that?
Yeah, I have. They got angry at me. You can see their face getting red, and but I told them, I was like, I know the law.
Right.
I said, I ain't got to show you nothing. I haven't broke the law, so I ain't got to tell you my name. I ain't got to say nothing.
Right.
I was like, if you ain't going to arrest me right now and put me in handcuffs, I'm walking away. And he was, this and that, but I walked away. He was mad, but I did get away.
Well, good for you. I mean, and thankfully, you feel safe enough to be able to turn your back and walk away. What I know in communities of color is I don't know anybody who feels safe enough to turn their back on a cop.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. I think there is racial profiling sometimes, but I don't think it's huge. You know, I mean, compared to the...
You don't think it's huge? Based on what?
If you break down the size of race, how many is in each community, and then the amount of crimes that those persons, each race, commits, it's pretty big. I mean, it seems like blacks, and call me racist or whatever, but it seems like blacks and Latinos, because I heard you specifically point them out about being harassed, commit more crimes than whites, though.
And what do you base that on?
I can't remember what site, but it was one of the federal. It's one of the federal sites I went to. I can't remember. I'd have to
see
look
you.
You get that back to you, but
yeah, I would love to find out what site, because every study that I have reviewed says that white and black people commit crimes at the exact same rate. So black people, Latino people, it's pretty consistent across the board about who commits crime. The difference is who's prosecuted, how they're prosecuted, and what happens after they have the encounter with the cop. It's a huge difference after that. But if you just look at crime rates in general, and unless you listen to Fox News every night, what you would know is that crime is consistent across the board. There is no ethnicity that creates more crimes than another. And so I don't think you're racist. I just think you're misinformed.
All right. Well, I enjoy listening to the show.
Well, thank you for calling, and I appreciate you bringing in a view that's different than my own. Have a great day.
All right, you too. Thank you.
Thank you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. How do we, the people of Portland, fix this problem with the police targeting vulnerable people in our community or people who are perceived to have no power? We're going to go back to the phone line. Hello, Tremaine. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, thanks for your program. I always enjoy it. I have a question.
Okay.
10% of our population are Hispanic,
right,
in Oregon, and roughly 10% of the jail population and 10% of the jail population are Hispanic and black being about, what, 2% or 3% of the Oregon population.
Right.
So we know there's a difference.
That's,
you know,
right.
But what I would like to see from KBOO and other, you know, is let's focus a little bit on the Hispanic numbers in Portland and in Multnomah County, because this is a very large minority group in Oregon, and I understand the focus on African Americans and blacks, and I'm totally supportive of all the numbers that, you know, that I read and I know about. But I'd also like to see a bit of a focus on our largest minority group in Oregon, which are the Hispanics, and how they're being harassed by the police and what's going on and all that.
Well, you know, I mean, you raise a really good question, because yeah, you may have heard me earlier talk about African American Latinos being targeted for stops by Portland police.
Mm-hmm.
The report that I spoke of has African American and Latino numbers in it.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about African Americans being twice as likely. Latinos are 1.7 times more likely. But I also have to say that I do not trust Portland police numbers as it relates to the Latino population. I believe the numbers are underreported for how many Latinos are really stopped and searched by Portland police.
You know,
and I think the reason is because Portland police would rather put Latinos into the white category, because then it doesn't make their numbers look as egregiously bad as it is.
Well, that's one way to look at it. But I think if you go down into Polk County and in Marion County, where there's some very large Hispanic populations, you might see some different kinds of numbers than in just the Portland-centric views. I totally agree. I understand what you're saying. But it's just that I would like to see a little bit more focus on our largest minority population in Oregon, which is 10% of our population.
Well, I'm sure that there's...
And that's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are some shows that really focus on a Latino population specifically. My show isn't that show.
Yeah,
and
I know
so,
that.
Yeah,
okay.
I know that there are other shows that do, and I think it's important to talk about the issues in a Latino community, and I certainly do. But yeah, that's not the focus of my show.
Okay, no, I understand that. Okay, bye.
Have a good day. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Hello, Mike. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm good. How about you?
Well, I just wanted to bring up one thing. I'm Caucasian. I'm a white guy. I just feel like our whole media, our whole advertising, everything that everybody sees, if I was a black person, it seems to me that fear is they produce this constant thing of fear.
Yes.
And so for a black person to walk away from a white cop or any cop, it just seems like it would be so much more difficult.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, and that's my point. That's the only point I have.
Well, thank
it's
you.
Just,
thank you very much for your call. And thank you for your ability to be empathetic to someone that's different than yourself. I appreciate that.
Well, if it's fear for them, then it's fear for me, because that's not the way it's supposed to be.
Well, and you know, you raise a good point, because I remember at my neighbor night out, the police came and tried to scare the daylights out of my retired neighbors, telling them that Max was bringing crime to the neighborhood. And they should be concerned, because now we've got prostitution, we got gang members, we got drug dealers. And if you see anybody that you don't recognize, call the police. And I thought, what a stupid message to send to...
It has a caustic effect on all of society.
Yes.
Once you start degrading things like that, and people need to be aware that it has a caustic effect on everything we do. It's degrading. It tears at the very...
fiber.
Fabric, or whatever you want to call
That's it. Right.
But it's just, okay.
Thank you. I appreciate your call so much. Have a good day.
You bet.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. We're going to slide right from this conversation about Blue Monk into a conversation about what's been happening with the new COPS program downtown, COPP, Chronic Offender Pilot Project is what Portland Place calls it. Back to the phone line. Hello, Captain Dan. Welcome to KBOO.
Well, thank you for having me.
You're
welcome. I'd like to make a comment on the previous caller speaking of racial profiling.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand you said that the crime stats are such that white crime is equal to black crime.
Right.
But the prosecution of black crime is higher than the white crime.
That's correct. Or the arrest is higher, the prosecution is higher, the penalties are more severe, et cetera, et cetera.
Could you cite your source on that?
Absolutely. You could go to the Department of Justice. I mean, you could go to you could go to the State of Oregon's Department of Corrections and get their data for who's arrested. Then you can go to the Department of Justice Civil Rights webpage and then determine and then look at what the national crime data statistics tells you. Then you could talk to the district attorneys who are the prosecutors and talk, and they can tell you about how plea deals are made and who gets the deal and who doesn't. And so it would require you to do a full education of what's called our justice system, but that information is available. And since I've been studying it, studying it for the last 24 years, I know that there are a lot of sources to get that information, but then you have to
think a district attorney is going to admit that he would give a lesser charge to a white offender than a black offender.
The district attorney can tell you what the status shows about the cases that have come through their office. So are they going to tell you? No, but can you read? Yeah, if you can read, you can figure it out.
Wouldn't that skew the stats, though, if only so many reported white crime are as opposed to so many reported black crime? Isn't that skewing the stats?
Say that again?
Wouldn't that kind of skew the stats that if only so many white crime are reported and prosecuted to black crime? Because from what I gather and doing my own research, blacks are prosecuted more. I do agree with that. But I also agree that blacks commit more crime, especially black-on-black crime. And the previous caller talking about racial profiling, the way I look at it, which is a stupid analogy, but I'll give you that. If I look at a dog, say a small dog, and it's wagging its tail, or I look at a big dog that's showing teeth and not, immediately I would fear the dog that's showing its teeth. And I think as a society, we have been groomed so much to fear the black man. The black man's going to do this, that. I worked in public housing in Portland at the largest public housing property. And you see kids that look like gang members. They're not gang members. Some of them are, some aren't. And I think our whole society, including the music culture, is telling everybody, you got to fear this person. You have to fear it. And then the society grows up, those kids want to be gang members. A lot of them. They want to be hard and respected, and it's awful. I feel sorry for the black community and the fact that the only option a lot of them feel they have is being in a gang and trying to be hard to earn respect.
You know, I don't know how many black people you know. And so I don't know how to. I appreciate you. What I appreciate about what you said is that it is clear that African Americans are prosecuted more often and more severely. And so it is clear to me that you've done some research. But your analysis about life as a black child needs some work, because I know a lot of black people. I don't know any black people that want to be in a gang. I know people that Portland police would call gang members because of the way they dress, because of their speaking cadence, but they're not. And so I think you're right that as a society, we've conditioned people to fear black boys. And it started back in the Reagan days when we started the war on drugs, and then crack came out, and all of a sudden, you know, see, we told you about those crazy black people. So we've been raised in a society that expects us to fear black men. And so that's going to be a much longer conversation. So I want to thank you for calling.
Thank
but
you
I want to challenge your perception about black households. Most black people I know live in two-parent households. They have a mom and a dad. They've got an extended network. They've got a lot of aunties and uncles who, you know, who support the development of those young people. And until we stop believing the public perception of black boys, we will continue to create this society where the expectations for black boys are different than the expectations for white boys. I have the exact same expectation for black boys, that they grow up to be successful, that they decide what they want to do with their life, and that they grow up and they change the world. That's what I want them to do, just like I want white boys to do. But white boys have the advantage that the media portrays them as good guys, and they portray the black boys as bad guys. And I'm out of time to have this conversation, but I want to thank you for calling, and I promise you that this is not the end of this conversation. This is the beginning of this conversation. But I appreciate you putting yourself out there, right? Because it's kind of hard to say things
out in the open. And thank you very much for having me.
Thank you. You have a fabulous day.
You too.
Okay. Bye now. My blood pressure was getting a little high, but then I realized, you know, this is a man who is open to learning new information. So I want to appreciate him once again for calling in and appreciate my home training that I could actually listen for things that I agreed with rather than jumping on the things that made me a little bit crazy. And so I want to welcome to the studio Ibrahim Mubarak and I want to and Lisa Faye. Thank you both for being here with me today.
Thank you.
Of course, you're both from Right to Dream, too. You've been here many times before, so I don't feel like I have to introduce you to my listening audience. They know you guys. They know the work you're doing. And they may also know that you were arrested recently. Talk about a segue, huh? A nice segue. So, would you please tell the listening audience, because we're going to get into why that is, but so a week or so ago, a little bit over a week ago, what happened?
A week ago, where we have been getting multitudes of complaints for months that that the houseless community was being harassed and bullied and criminalized for existing. And so when they get arrested, they come to us and call us and say, what do we do? We have our belongings taken away, my pharmaceutical medicines in there, pictures of my daughter who I won't have, you know, et cetera, all sentimental value. So we send them to IPR, Independent Police Review, to make a...
Sorry, didn't mean to laugh. Go ahead.
To make a report, and then they report. They had on one of the young ladies' thing that they won't further investigate any written report or complaints against certain officers because they're homeless. And I put that shout out and let people know that.
Now, wait a minute. Wait. I'm sorry. You lost me. Let's back up a minute, because if you lost me, you may have lost my listeners too.
Okay.
Say that again. Now so homeless people are being ticketed, right?
Yes.
And they are being ticketed for
Living on the streets and with having no where to go, because there's not enough affordable housing, there's not enough shelter space.
Right.
And we at Right to Survive and Right to Dream too are trying to create rest areas where people won't be on the sidewalk, which we want the same thing the public and the city official want, people off the sidewalk. So
wait, let me read this. Okay. So you've been sending people to IPR because that is supposedly the place where community members who have been victimized by police go to get their complaint addressed.
Yeah.
And so you get a letter, or people are getting letters from IPR saying, and I quote, IPR will not be taking any further action on your complaint against Officer Jovic, that Officer Jovic harassed due to your being homeless because Portland police members have a duty to enforce laws that prohibit camping on public property and laws against erecting permanent or temporary structures on public property or public right-of-ways.
Right.
Consequently, IPR will not take any further action on those particular allegations.
Yes. And so they saying, well, what do we do? We're doing everything we're supposed to do, and now they're not going to take further action. So if they're not going to take further action, then the police know it. They go back to those people and harass them and make their life miserable.
So what I don't understand, and of course, I know that IPR is a totally incompetent oversight system. So let me just say that from the beginning. And just knowing that it's an incompetent oversight system, mm-hmm. the complaint was specifically about rude and demeaning behavior to an individual.
Yeah.
So you're going to tell me that IPR has decided that they will take no more complaints against this particular officer, Christopher Jovic, for being rude and demeaning.
Yes.
Because he's got a job to do. One has nothing to do with the other, right? If he is following the law in the city of Portland, the law does not allow him to be rude and demeaning to any individual, regardless of their house status.
Exactamente.
And so, so this is good. I mean, yeah. I hope that people are holding on to this paperwork, because when the city tells us that this is like the best independent police review process that we could possibly have. And the last story I did, in fact, the IPR supposedly is going to investigate what happened at the Blue Monk. I will hold my breath because I can already see the report, right? The report will say that the police did nothing wrong.
Yes.
If the IPR is investigating, you can be assured that's what's going the outcome is going
exactly.
to be. And so as a community, we got to know that when we use the system that is in place for us to file complaints, and the system rejects 77% of the complaints that walk in the door, and this is the kind of reasoning they use to not investigate an officer for being rude and disrespectful and demeaning to a community member.
Mm-hmm.
I'm appalled by that. But okay, let's move on, because I could spend a lot of time talking about our incompetent oversight process.
And so you can imagine how we at Right to Survive and Right to Dream too feel, because we're trying to inform them to take the proper measures, take the proper steps, and then they get knocked down for this. And what we do? Just the same way when they try to find housing or shelter is not enough. What do we do when the police sweep them? Where do we go? What do we do? There's no answer for them, but we have a meantime solution at Right to Dream too. So we have our annual Under the Bridge walk, where we go and do outreach to the houseless people. Is it anything you need? Right. Can we refer you to any agencies or services that you need to acquire or do something? Right. And under the Burnside Bridge, you got Mercy Corps and they parking lot, which is private property. And then what we found out, the other side of that parking lot is University of Oregon, which is private property. So the only place you can walk is on the sidewalk. However, that's where houseless people sleep at.
Right.
And so we was right at the curb on the parking lot saying, how are you doing?
Right.
Do you need any help?
Right.
And so all of a sudden, you see, if you've seen the video, the police rushed
me. You're surrounded, right.
Yeah, and said, give me your name. I said, we already took your picture. You took my picture? What for? You know?
Right.
And then I'm starting to be humorous. Say, okay, you seeing me doing outreach and doing something good, helping houseless people.
Right.
And so they wanted to give me a citation, which is going to exclude me from property, which is public. And last I checked, I'm the public. How can you exclude the public from public property?
From a public property, right.
So I said, no, I'm not going to give you my name. And they said, well, get up on the sidewalk. I said, don't you see people sleeping there? Mm-hmm. Well, they don't belong there. Kick them out the way. I said, I'm not going to kick them out the way. And then the sergeant, then they come rushing me again and saying, well, you got to get on the sidewalk or I'm going to arrest you. And I said, what? And she started counting one, two, and I said, well, you can ask me nicely. You know, I'm thinking that she's talking. All of a sudden, they arrest me. But the thing of it is,
and what did they charge you with?
They charged me with interfering with a police officer and criminal trespass.
So I'm glad you brought up that interfering with the police officer thing, because that is the new Portland Police Bureau program, also known as COPP, C-O-P-P. It is called the Chronic Offender Pilot Project, a new brainstorm of the police chief, Mike Reese, because, you know, he cannot find constitutional rights violations that he doesn't like to just take further and further and further. And so you were arrested for interfering with a police officer. How were you interfering with a police officer by engaging in conversation with houseless people, trying to find out if they needed blankets and pillows and whatever supports they needed? How can that translate into interfering with a police officer?
Well, because we were supporters and we do outreach and we're an organization that help houseless people. And so what we was doing by being there was stopping them from harassing the houseless people. So that's interfering with what they want to do. That's what
Right. And so you got a citation, or is this, I mean, so were, did you get a citation, or were you booked into the jail?
I didn't get a citation because I wouldn't give them my name. And then when they handcuffed me and started going through my pockets, I had my business cards on me with my legal name, Ibrahim Bula Mubarak, on it. And so they ran my name. They put, they took me to jail and they booked me. Then all of a sudden I'm hearing a old familiar
name from way
back then. Right. You know, we were wearing afros. And, and so I did not say, wow, that's a familiar name, you know. And so they came and tapped me on my shoulder and said, they called me your name. I said, I didn't hear him say Ibrahim. You know, and they said, no. He said, Keith Jackson. I said, oh, that's my birth name, but I changed my name years ago legally. And they said, well, you had to sign this paper and put this armband on. I said, I'm not going to do it. I said, we're going to put you in the hole. And on my way to the hole, I don't know if this is on record or not. They said, well, we're going to call you what your mama named you, not what Alibaba called you.
Ooh.
So, yeah, so I said, well, let me make a phone call to my wife and to my lawyer so they can know I'm going to be here a while, because I'm not signing that. Falsifying information. They tried to force me to falsify information. They said, no, you can't make a phone call. So they told me to take some of my clothes off, threw me in a hole, and cut the air conditioning on. And then 4 hours later, they came and released me with Ibrahim Mubarak on the paperwork because I wouldn't sign it.
Interesting. Yeah. So there's a lot going on here, needless to say. I mean, there's just, we're just skimming the surface of this organized effort by Portland Police to work with private security companies downtown to take pictures and then support private security officers and excluding people. Now, what I don't understand is if a private security officer issues an exclusion, that is not a police action. That is not a police action. So therefore, you've done nothing to interfere with a police officer. And so then if you come back and then a police officer sees you, the police officer cannot use the work of a private security firm to then decide that you are now interfering with a police officer.
Exactly. And not only that, but you have a criminal record. You have a criminal thing on you. So
this is how it starts.
That's how it starts. And that stops you. Like when you're filling out an application for work or apartments, have you ever committed a crime? And you can qualify, and then you get to that last bottom of the page, and they say, well, wow, you was, you know, disorderly in conduct. We don't know. We want that attitude here. And people can't get housed or can't get work.
Well, and
this
is
the beginning.
You raise a very good point, because that's exactly what it does. It starts the criminalization process, right? So when you get the citation, that's like a parking ticket, you know. You pay it, it goes away. But if you're houseless, you're not getting a notification that you need to show up at a certain date, at a certain courthouse. And so then you are, then you didn't show up for court. So first is the exclusion. Then you come back. Now you have a legal because now you're interfering with an officer because you're back. So now a crime has been committed, a misdemeanor, but a crime, right? So you don't get the paperwork that says, by the way, you need to show up in court at this date, this time, bring blah, blah, blah. And so now there's a warrant out for your arrest because you've missed your court date. So now the next time that officer sees you and runs your name, there's a warrant. So now you go to jail.
Right.
Right. And then, you know, you'll go to jail for as long as they have room in the local jail. And then you're out on the street again. If that officer sees you again, now you've been jailed for a misdemeanor. Now, all of a sudden, you could be facing felony conviction because now you have stacked the debt. And I understand that the district attorney's office was mistaken when they first put this pilot program together. And when they advised Portland police, because I understand that there were 19 people that have been prosecuted so far.
Yeah.
17 of those people were not supposed to have been charged with interfering with a peace officer.
Exactly.
And the DA's comment was, well, there's nothing we could do about people who've already been convicted. Excuse me? And so there's a lot of problems here, right? First, there's no oversight of the city council on these new programs that Reese rolls out once a month. He's got another program that targets vulnerable populations in our community. This is the latest one. Last month, it was the Stop and Pat. Where you just stop and pat down black and brown people because you got to feel safe before you have a conversation.
Oh, I thought they wanted to feel our muscles.
And so you have a court date coming up on Monday.
Monday,
you will see the judge?
Yes.
At 9 o'clock?
Yes.
Federal courthouse, downtown?
JC, Justice Center.
Justice
room
Center?
One.
Yeah. Room 1. And what do you expect will happen there?
I have not yet been contacted by a court appointed attorney yet.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they will just drop the charges because they see them right. But we have a rally going. And since my trademark is my mumia, my glasses, everybody's supposed to wear sunglasses.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully.
Very cool. Yeah. So that's 9 o'clock Monday morning.
Yes.
People are going to be rallying around 8.
Yeah.
And then you see the judge at 9. So, Lisa, what's been the impact of all this craziness over the last week or so?
Well, now we've actually had people hear our cries because for so often we've been out for years now, we've been out in the streets saying houseless people are being victimized by the police.
Right.
And very few people, I wouldn't say no one, very few people have listened. But now with Ibrahim's arrest, people are actually paying attention and listening and seeing how the police are taking laws and bending them to fit whatever they want
to do.
To do.
Right.
So it's been a positive experience.
Yeah. She says that's the person that wasn't arrested.
Yeah, no. You didn't get handcuffed. You didn't sit in the freezer.
Well, the funny thing about that is I was the one down there filming that night when he got arrested. So, the sad thing is that as one of our outreach people was engaging with a security officer, asking them questions, you could see the female officer, Thompson, pointing in Ibrahim's direction and targeting him, going after him, and then actually initiating what was already confrontational,
right.
But when he was just trying to ask questions, but
right.
She was defensive already, mm-hmm. And she had this agenda that, you know, you could just see the preconceived agenda that she was going to make sure that she got an arrest.
Mm-hmm. And so we're going to go to the phone line. We've got several callers that have been patiently waiting. Hello, Brian. Welcome to KBOO. Thank you for your patience. Hello, Andrew. Welcome. I think we may have missed them. Hopefully they will call back. have a phone malfunction there for just a sec. But let me tell you what's coming up today on the Boo. At 9, Teresa Mitchell hosts Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, Paraford hosts Fight the Empire, pair hosts Fight the Empire. He'll focus on the escalating crisis in Ukraine. At 10 is Eric Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andrea. At 10:15, Flashpoint continues coverage of the situation in Ukraine with former high-level CIA analyst Ray McGovern and Answer Coalition founder Richard Becker. At 11 on Between the Covers, local illustrator Chelsea Stevens and photographer and writer Patrick Dixon discuss the Fisher Ports anthology Anchored in Deep Water. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Portland author Stephen Hanks discusses his book, The Aki Tree, A Portland to Africa Search for Family. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous contribution during our pledge drive. If you're not a member, you still can become by going to kboo.fm and clicking the tip jar. And so Monday's the court hearing. I think I'm so sorry that you were arrested, but I think one of the positives that comes out of you being arrested is A, your position in the community as a community leader, and B, the fact that the abuses that you suffered at the hands of Portland police are not appropriate when anybody's being arrested. So, for example, they decide that they're going to go back and use the your birth name that you were born with, even though you haven't used it in decades, and then to try to get you to sign legal documents with that name.
Exactly.
And then when you decide not to, decide that they're going to put you in a hole and turn the air conditioning on, right? Because exactly. That's a way to torture you with no marks being on your body, right?
Exactly. That reminds me of, like I told one person when I was watching Street Roots as a little child, when Kunta Kinkade wouldn't accept the name Toby until they beat him.
It was Roots, not all. Street Roots.
Well, yeah, Street Roots. Israel
had
to get me.
Had to slip in.
It was Roots. I'm sorry. It was Roots.
But you were saying?
Yeah, and they wanted to change his name, and he stood his ground until they beat him, cut his foot off. And so this is a tactic that they use to take your culture, your tradition, and your self-esteem away. And I often tell people in some of my speeches, what you see when you look at me and they be astonished, I say I'm the three worst things to the American government. I'm black, I'm Muslim, and I'm homeless.
Right.
And these are things that they do. They target and they criminalize of you for being differences. And this country have not yet learned to accept difference.
Well, and of course, you may have been listening to the first half of the program. Right? We don't accept differences well. We have callers on the line. Hello, Andrew. Welcome to KBOO.
Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Hopefully I'm not off topic at all, but talking about what you were talking about a little bit earlier, last night I was listening to OPB and they had a show on gentrification.
Oh, right.
And I was kind of faded in and out, but it was interesting. At one point, they had I believe it was an African-American male, older male, and he had been a postal worker for quite a while, and he was talking about his route and how he had seen many black families move off from these areas, but none move in.
Right.
And at one point, the host was Jeff Norcross, and I thought it was kind of interesting. He said to the guy, well, you've benefited from gentrification, right? and he said, well, the house values have gone up. He said, well, yeah, you know, my house is $50,000. I bought it's probably $400 now. But, you know, and I thought the guy was a little, Norcross was a little aggressive because, like, you're trying to say he benefited. He hasn't sold his house. He's living where he wants to live. So if he doesn't sell his house, it's not money. And if anything, his property taxes have probably gone up. So he's probably actually spending more money.
That's right.
Because of the gentrification. But I just thought it was interesting on the show.
That is a very interesting point. And the other thing is, would have been nice had he asked him, and is your favorite barber still in your neighborhood? And what about your church?
Businesses.
Right,
The old timer was pretty cool. He mentioned businesses moving out. You know, he'd done the route for something like 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it was like, well, you're just going to bully him that he has profited from the whole thing.
Right. But that's a way to minimize African-American experiences, right? It's a way to say, well, you know, well, if your home, gosh, if your home is worth $400,000, you must feel pretty great. Well, not if the police stop me every time I walk out my door.
Yeah. Well, not if I got to move out of my home. Well, my home area's changed anyways. Now it's all become completely white and a lot more wealthy people.
Yes.
And to make the profit, I have to sell my house and move someplace else. I've lived here 40 years.
Right.
You know. So,
well, thank you.
Thank you for your show today.
Thank you. Appreciate your call. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
We'll take the next caller.
Michael.
Hello, Michael. Welcome to KBOO.
Yes, hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Do you know the... let me get off the speakerphone here. Do you know the OPB talk show, Think Out Loud?
Yes.
They had a show about the rap music club and the thing that happened with the police.
Uh-huh.
And they had a cop on, and he said something which sounded reasonable to me, and I have no reason to refute it, but you might, and then that would be some new thoughts in my head.
Okay. What did he say?
Well, they asked him... basically, I don't remember it verbatim, but it was something like, why are you paying more police attention to the black clubs than the white clubs? Or like you were saying at the beginning of the show about Alberta Street versus someplace else.
Right.
And what he said was, because people aren't getting shot in the white places, and they are getting shot in the black places, and we're trying to keep people from getting shot. So that's what he said, and I'm curious to hear what you have to say in response to that.
Well, thank you so much for asking that question. I would ask him to prove it because, you know, when I read the paper about crime, I see a lot of white people get killed on a regular basis in the city of Portland and see them get injured. So, and what I know, like I talked about the Alberta Street Fair, a whole bunch of drunk white people partying up and down the street. Had that been African-Americans that started it, it would have lasted one weekend, and it would have had massive police presence, and they would have shut it down by the time they tried to do it a second time. That's just fact. So I would ask the police to prove it, because remember, the police gets to decide who a gang member is, and they are not really good at identifying gang members, and they have way, way, way too many labels. Like Ludacris said... well, they say I'm gang affiliated. Did I live in a neighborhood where gang members lived? Well, yeah. Was I ever in a gang? No. Right? And so Portland Police do a really poor job. And in fact, in their mind, if you're a black kid, you just have to prove you're not in a gang, right? Because their automatic assumption is that you are. So I would tell him, I'd ask him to prove it. I'd want to see the data, and I'd want to see data that didn't come from the Portland police, but data that came from independent sources. And not the IPR. Yeah, right. We got a couple of more callers, so we're going to go very quickly. Hello, Joanne. Welcome to KBOO.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, because the switch just went on. Angela Davis has got a gorgeous idea. Landscapes without prisons. I would go to your rally that Monday, but I got too much pain in my body and I got too many problems that I get no help with. And you'll probably be mad at me for putting this out, but I'm going to do it. Is there a support group or any place where privatized public housing people can talk about their problems in the public housing and the fascism in it?
I think, in fact, most public housing units, at least the new ones, have a residence council. And if yours doesn't, you may want to start one. But that would be my recommendation. We've got just a few minutes left. And I didn't even get into, so you have to come back, because I wanted to talk about the $800,000 that the city council set aside and whether or not that's a bribe to make houseless people invisible again, knowing that that's a very temporary fix to a long-term problem. So I'm going to have to invite you back to have that conversation.
Okay.
But again, I want to make sure that people understand that you're not the only person who is being targeted by Portland police. In fact, last week I met a young woman who had the exact same experience. A private security guard had issued her a citation. Portland police was right behind her to give her a ticket for interfering with an officer. And so she was fearful that she was going to end up with this criminal history through no fault of her own other than the fact of being houseless.
Exactly.
And that's just not acceptable in a progressive community. And we know we're not progressive as we think we are, but we certainly are better than this. And so if people want more information, how to get involved, I know you have a Facebook page, website, want to get people info?
Yes, you can contact Right to Survive on Facebook or at PDX. R2SPDX@gmail, or on the Right to Dream 2 Facebook, and call 503-839-9992.
And I'll put that info on my Facebook page and website. Have a great day. It's Joanne Hardesty. See you next week. Same time, same place, same station.
Heaven is on the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's an all that glitter is gold. After story had never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand up for your right. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Sky, take away everything and make everybody feel high. But if you know what life is worth, you would look for yours on earth. And now you see the light.
Hey, good morning. You are listening to the Mighty Boo, KBOO Portland. 9 o'clock on your Thursday morning. Coming up in a half hour at 9:30, Per Fogering hosts Fight the Empire. He'll focus on the escalating crisis in the Ukraine. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. Coming up at 10:15 today on Flashpoints, they continue coverage of the situation in the Ukraine with former high-level CIA analyst Ray McGovern and Answer Coalition founder Richard Becker. At 11 on Between the Covers, local illustrator Chelsea Stevens and photographer and writer Patrick Dixon discuss the Fisher Poets Anthology, Anchored in Deep Water. And at 11:30 on Black Book Talk, Portland author Stephen Hanks discusses his book, The Aki Tree, A Portland to Africa Search for Family. That's all coming up this morning on KBOO. Up next, it's Teresa Mitchell hosting Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know. Stick around.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the March selection for the monthly Jefferson High School Multicultural Film Festival. This month, the film The Canary Effect will show on Tuesday, March 11th. The Canary Effect is a 2006 documentary that looks into the effects that the United States and its policies have on the indigenous population. That's The Canary Effect, Tuesday, March 11th at 6 p.m. at the North Killingsworth Library. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Thank you to the following restaurants for helping us with our March 1st open house. Dove Vive Pizza, located at 2727 Northeast Gleason Street, and Gracie's at Hotel Deluxe, 729 Southwest 15th Avenue. We had a great time. Thank you.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Yellow Pages, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit pdxgyp.com.
This is Press Watch, a weekly counter-propaganda and left opinion program here on your people-supported free radio station, KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. Join me for a brief peek behind the video veil of Monopoly media manipulation and an examination of the news you're not supposed to know. I'm going to talk about Ukraine in a moment. But first, I want to talk about this thing that keeps popping up since we get closer to the three-year anniversary of the meltdowns at Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. Yeah, is it that much time already? You can hear something here and there whenever radioactivity is brought up. And I've mentioned it before, but it's called the banana dose equivalent. And the premise of the banana dose equivalent is that everything is a little radioactive, and you can compare radioactivity with bananas, and that should make your little mind at ease. For example, from Wikipedia, they say, the major natural source of radioactivity in plant tissue is potassium, which in nature contains 0.0117% of the unstable isotope potassium-40. This isotope decays with a half-life of about 1.25 billion years. And therefore, the activity of the natural potassium is about 31 becquerels per gram, meaning that in 1 gram of the element, about 31 atoms will decay per second. Plants naturally contain other radioactive isotopes, such as carbon-14, but their contribution to the total activity is much smaller. Since a typical banana contains about half a gram of potassium, it will have a activity of roughly 15 becquerels. Although the amount in a single banana is small, in environmental and medical terms, the radioactivity from a truckload of bananas is capable of causing a false alarm when passed through a radiation portal monitor used to detect possible smuggling of nuclear material at U.S. ports. And, for example, you can find a comment at Forbes.com that says, there's much screaming and shouting from the usual suspects about the new radiation leak discovered at Fukushima, the stricken nuclear power plants in Japan. What they're not telling you is that the radiation leakage is about the same as 76 million bananas, a fact which should help put it all in some perspective. The banana equivalent dose. Well, here's what my Geiger counter sounds like when I'm measuring ambient radioactivity. Like right now, there's a few ticks, little bitty ticks. And here's what it sounds like when I approach it with a banana. Yeah, because the banana equivalent dose is a load of crap. I want to quote a Green Road on blogspot.com, which really hits the nail on the head about this. They compare the bananas with cesium. Cesium is a deadly poison. At the atomic or molecular level, the radioactivity activity of cesium is millions of times greater than that of some natural isotopes in the environment, such as potassium-40. The amount of